Following program deals with military and veteran issues. All comments and opinions expressed on this show are those who made them. They do not reflect the opinions of the Church of Satan or Radio Free Satan. So on with the show.
Welcome to the official Infernal Legion podcast. This is a Sinister Scuttlebutt episode, and I am your host, Warlock Jeff Bowling, the commander of the Infernal Legion. With me, as always, is my co-host, Warlock Dwayne Burns, the VSO of the Infernal Legion. Dwayne, how the hell are you, man?
I'm doing good.
He says with most Eeyore tones I've ever heard.
We were supposed to do this last week, and I kind of flubbed it up on us. I've been trying to find some alternative means of pain relief. I mean, as we know, I was on morphine for many years, and I got very dependent upon it, and I just felt like my quality of life has gone to shit because my body hurts all the time. I physically took myself off that stuff and went cold turkey and all that. And I got into some edibles last Wednesday.
And said, fuck the podcast.
it fucked me up for 2 days.
Yeah, those medical grade edibles are no joke, man.
Oh, god damn. It was a gummy worm. And that son of a bitch fucked me up. I sat here laughing at a commercial for 45 minutes, and I was being looked at by everybody. What the fuck is wrong with you? And all I could hear is this commercial over and over when I saw it. It was unbelievable. I couldn't do a damn podcast.
It would have been entertaining now. All right, and of course, joining Dwayne and myself is our producer who hangs out in the shadows back there, Warlock Jeff Ivins, the communications officer for the Infernal Legion. Jeff, how are you, man?
I'm doing well.
See what I mean by Eeyores? I'm surrounded by them.
Oh, yeah, right. Look who's talking. No.
Any updates on the Seabees? I know you guys just finished Seabees. You know the Sea Cadets.
Yeah. Just got a bunch of new cadets in, and the old ones are leaving, so I'm kind of like running around with a chicken with my head cut off.
How was the graduation ceremony?
Oh, there is none.
There
wasn't one because of the COVID crap going on.
Ah, that makes sense, yeah.
So,
well, that's so unfortunate.
Yeah,
you know, for those cadets.
But other than that, everything's going good. Just sitting here. I know the last Saturday of the month, I'm going to be DJing a Western night. Something that's against my better judgment, but
on the internet or
no. I'm going to be DJing it at a bar here in town.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So, it's all going to be classic and modern country. I'd rather do the 80s, but...
I'd suggest having some of those Twisted Teas before you deal with that crowd.
Oh, they got Twisted Teas there, so...
He said, fuck that, he's going to bring the fireball with him.
No, this is...
a paid event.
No, actually, well, for me it is, but it's kind of a beer and wine bar.
Oh. Ah, gotcha. So you're getting paid in drinks, right?
No, I'm going to get paid in cash.
Beer and wine bar, hence good man, the country good music.
Man. Yep. So other than that,
all right, gentlemen. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, this is a Sinister Scuttlebutt episode. So let's jump into it. We've got a lot of news to talk about. And up first, there's an update on the two of the soldiers who were killed in the October 4th, 2017 Nigerian ambush. in the Horn of Africa. And in case anyone's wondering why soldiers were in Niger getting killed, the global war on terrorism is still going on. It has not ended. It probably won't end anytime soon. We'll get into that later.
Hence global.
Two of the four soldiers that were killed have been symbolically inducted into the Special Forces Regiment to recognize their bravery during the hellish battle, a spokesperson for U.S. Army Special Operations Command said. And this article is from Task and Purpose, by the way. So Army Sergeant LeDavid Johnson and Sergeant First Class Jeremiah W. Johnson. By the way, Sergeant First Class Jeremiah Johnson, that's a fantastic name. Just throwing that out there. Were named honorary Green Berets during a private ceremony held for their families on Tuesday at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Sergeant First Class Johnson served as a chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear specialist, and Sergeant Johnson was a wheeled vehicle mechanic. Both soldiers were assigned to 3rd Special Forces Group while serving in Niger. They were part of an 11-man Special Forces team at the time of the ambush. So when you jump into the story of what these two did, it's actually really impressive, especially for a Seaburn specialist and a mechanic. Essentially, when they got ambushed, they were ambushed in the open, which rarely happens in military ambushes, mainly because it's not smart. But they covered open ground and not only provided covering fire, but provided medical assistance to actual Special Forces Green Berets who had been injured. And returned fire and actually killed some of the enemy soldiers and then died in the process. It's an incredible story of bravery from these two. And their reward, besides all the awards and whatnot, is to be posthumously named honorary Green Berets, which almost never happens in the history of the Army. It doesn't matter how long you've been in a Special Forces unit. You know, if you're not a Green Beret, if you haven't gone through selection and Special Forces school and SEER training and all that stuff that they have to go through, you don't get named a Green Beret.
I believe there's been 40.
In total since the beginning.
Right.
Yeah. The last one that was named was Doris Baker back in 2014, who was recognized as an honorary Green Beret after spending 40 years teaching the children of Special Forces soldiers at a Defense Department school in Germany. So 40 years of her life doing that, and this happened 10 years after her retirement when they finally did it. So you have
the
to...
woman can't be an infantry soldier.
Well, I'm not sure she did much infantry stuff.
Oh, I'm sure she did. Bastard! I'm a Special Forces and a female. Take that.
It's a huge honor to these guys. Now, obviously, as Satanists, we recognize that things like this don't have any bearing on the individual themselves. It doesn't make them feel any better. They're dead, unfortunately. But it's huge for their families to have this kind of honor bestowed upon them and to be able to say that their son, brother, husband, father, what have you, was a Green Beret. Specifically for valorous actions overseas. I mean, that's huge. And the military, as we've talked about on the show before, is a giant warrior culture, and it has to be. So that's a big deal. You guys have any thoughts on it?
I think that's huge. I mean, you can only do so much for a soldier in honor. And I mean,
did you cut out there, Dwayne?
No.
Oh, okay.
he did something he normally doesn't do. Stop talking.
Okay. All
right. My mistake. There's an old tradition amongst, and I mean old, like ancient tradition amongst Northern European tribes and warrior cultures, where if someone dies bravely, you put a sword or an axe in their hand to guarantee their passage to a warrior's afterlife. And this is kind of what I placed that with. Now, obviously, you know, you can talk about the myth behind that and all that, but the honor of doing it, I don't know. It's just a huge deal. So, I mean, it sucks that it happened to him, but it's a huge honor. Both of these soldiers were killed alongside Special Forces soldiers, Staff Sergeant Brian C. Black and Staff Sergeant Dustin M. Wright, when a co-American and Nigerian military team was ambushed by more than 100 fighters from the Islamic State terrorist group near the village of Tongo Tongo. And yes, I did not just stutter. Its name is Tongo Tongo. Now, obviously, anyone who's listening should probably pull out a map and take a look at Africa and the Middle East to see how far away Niger is from eastern Syria and western Iraq, where the big fight against ISIS is actually happening. But that's a pretty widespread area of influence that's happening with these operations.
That's why I had mentioned when you said global war and terrorism isn't over yet. That's why it's global. I mean, it's fucking everywhere.
Right, and technically, and it does bring us into the global war on terrorism. Technically, it's been happening since 1998 was the unofficial beginning of the global war on terror. Obviously, it came to a head in 9/11 of 01 with the attack on the Twin Towers. That's when we fully recognized it and whatnot. But the unofficial beginning was back all the way back in 1998, and it is still going on, and it still involves I'm probably going to get this wrong, but it's something like 60 nations just on the, I guess you could say, coalition side. And many hundreds. Many hundreds of various terrorist groups and paramilitary organizations, and then of course official governments that protect and recognize them. You know, we're not going to call it any names. Saudi Arabia. But
You said 1998. I look at this as going all the way back to President Carter's era with Iran. Iran stepped up and said, "Hey, I'm going to take a bunch of college people, and we're going to take them as, you know, hostages."
Right, but Iran did that as a country, not as a terrorist organization. So that was an act of an actual country against another country.
Iran, Hamas. What's the difference?
Hamas is they're state sponsored, but they're not. They don't actually have any land.
Country of origin.
Right? Yes.
Right. So, but you know, I mean, obviously, the United States has been fighting against terrorism, as any country fights against terrorists and rebels and
for many years.
Freedom fighters. And, yeah. And, of course, you know, we all know the big difference between a terrorist and a patriot is whether or not you win the battle. So this is a big deal for these guys. And I'm happy that the Special Forces Command was willing to recognize them with such a huge accomplishment. And my heart goes out to their families. I'm going to have to deal with these deaths, but hopefully this will bring some small comfort knowing just how noble they were.
You've got a heart flu?
It beats every now and then. So I'm going to continue this theme because we were talking about the global war on terrorism and how it hasn't. And that brings us to the two main pillars of the global war on terrorism. And that, of course, is Iraq and Afghanistan. The military operations, quote unquote, that have been going on for 20 fucking years now. This comes from military.com, and it's announced after a meeting between President Joe Biden and the Iraqi Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kadhimi that the U.S. is ending its combat role in Iraq by the end of the year. Now, before I jump into the article on the SPACs, how many times have we heard we're ending our combat role in Iraq? I can go back to...
quite a few times.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you have somebody like ISIS come up or something. Hey, we need a few more troops there.
Right. I go all the way back to George W. Bush and his hilarious stunt on the aircraft carrier when he said mission accomplished after we ousted Saddam Hussein. And technically, he wasn't wrong. Our mission was to oust Saddam Hussein, and we did. But yeah, mission accomplished. And then the next day, I think there was like the most casualties on a single day that have happened in that war.
So. Well, don't ever kid yourself. We still got people in Qatar and Bahrain and everything else. Quite a few soldiers.
Oh, sir.
Something happens, you know.
And according to this, we will be leaving 2,500 troops in Iraq. They'll just be in an
advisory. As advisors.
Yes.
In an advisory role.
And I know our listeners cannot see us, but I'm sure they could feel our collective eye roll with that. All right, so let's jump into the facts of this story. The United States will formally end its combat mission in Iraq by the end of the year, President Joe Biden announced Monday. Biden said the two nations will continue to work together in the fight against the Islamic State despite the drawdown. Biden, alongside Iraqi Prime Minister Mustafa al-Qadimi, and I apologize if I'm butchering his name, cited progress in the U.S.-led air campaign against the extremist group. That campaign saw intense conflict between 2014 and 2019 when thousands of U.S. troops returned to Iraq after the Islamic State fighters claimed large swaths of the country's land, overrunning Iraqi government forces. From the president's own mouth, quote, our role in Iraq will be to be available to continue to train, to assist, to help, and to deal with ISIS as it arrives. It's critical for the stability of the region, and our counterterrorism cooperation will continue, even as we shift to this new phase. We're going to be talking about, but we're not going to be, by the end of the year, in a combat mission. Now, this comes on the heels, and we've talked about it on the show numerous times in other Sinister Scuttlebutt episodes. This comes on the heels of an increase in rocket and mortar attacks against both Iraqi military bases and U.S. military bases. It also comes on the heels of the killing of the Iranian general in Baghdad. So there's been a big tension. There's always been tension between Iran and Iraq, but that tension has gotten even worse over the last few years. However, the killing of Soleimani is what opened the door for the Iraqi, and I'm not sure what their legislative body is called, Parliament, I believe.
Parliament.
To request that the U.S. draw down its combat role in Iraq. I have said, and I'm not going to backtrack now, that I am all for ending these stupid fucking wars as soon as we can fucking end them. And I am still 100% on that. It's been way too damn long, and we need to get out. And we're going to talk more about that in the next story we talk about. But I do feel from a tactical standpoint, or I should say from a strategic standpoint, that this one has to be done very carefully, with Iran essentially funding, for lack of a better term, more and more operations in Iraq, and with ISIS pushing down from Syria. It's going to be a hairy situation. What do you guys think?
I agree. It's going to be very hairy. And you know, it's the Iranian, not so much the Iranian government, but it's the Iranian militias that have so much influence there in Iraq. Yeah, mm-hmm. Iraq's a crazy place as far as being a Muslim, and the Kurds, for that matter. You got the Kurds up north, but I mean, you have Sunni Muslims and you have Shiite Muslims. And, you know, a lot of people don't know the difference. You know, a lot of people say a Muslim's a Muslim's a Muslim. But
it's a huge difference. It's uncle or brother.
Exactly. There's a huge difference. And they hate each other, frankly. And if Iran could have their way, Iraq would be a Shiite state.
Yeah, and I hate to say it, but Saddam Hussein held that back for a very long time.
Oh, I know. I have said it a few times that we made a mistake by killing Saddam. We were able to keep him at bay, and we were able to, you know, slap him on the hand and say, dude, you're fucking wrong. And, you know, he would settle down. But when we took him out of power, and that just set off a whole chain of fucked up events.
Right. Power vacuum. And everyone jumped to try and fill it. Both countries like Iran and of course, interests from Saudi Arabia and places like that. But also, I guess you could say, self-styled would-be presidents or dictators that were in the country also. Yeah, it's a huge clusterfuck, and that's one of the reasons we've always needed to get out. And, of course, we'll go more into this when we talk about Afghanistan, because President Biden recently had to defend his action of pulling out of Afghanistan. So we're going to go into that in a minute. But the second we decided to stick around and design Iraq the way we pictured it being, the second we decided to build a brand new country in the place of Saddam's Iraq, everything went to fucking hell.
Oh, yeah.
Always. And,
well, those people are resilient people over there, and you're not going to tell them that they are going to do it this way. Certainly, I mean, they're a third world country, but they are a very resilient people, like I say. And you know, you're telling them they're going to do it this way, and they're just, you know, it ain't happening.
Right. Oh, and part of that is the reason you pointed to the Sunni, the Shia, and the Kurds. They don't get along. They don't like each other. Let's, you know, not forget the Yazidis that are in the northern Iraq as well.
Aren't those the ones that are in Saudi too? The primary?
No, the Yazidis are the religious. The Yazidis.
Yeah, yeah. I said Jeff said something.
No, I don't. I think they're like north of where the Kurds are at.
Right.
Yeah, they're tucked back there, and there was a study recently. I didn't have this pulled up because I didn't expect to jump into it, but there's a study recently that came out that shows that they're not even ethnically related to Kurds. Like, for the longest time, people thought the Yazidis were a subsect of Kurd. But no, they're not even ethnically related to them in that regard. So you've got three major tribes and one smaller tribe all vying for different visions of what Iraq should look like. And they've been doing this for a very long time, for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And it wasn't until someone like Saddam Hussein took over that there was any semblance of unity amongst them. And most of that was out of fear, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But the second you remove that, now they all are back to try to paint their picture of Iraq. And the U.S. was foolish enough to think that we could stick around for damn near 20 years and show them a better way of doing it. there's no easy answer to these things when it comes to everything from logistics to diplomacy in wars and operations of this nature. But there's sure as hell wrong answers. And the wrong answer is the way we've been doing.
Right. You know how things bother me when I don't fucking know my information right off the bat and I gotta go look something up. It's it's the Saudi, and excuse me, I'm probably gonna butcher this, but Mutaween, Mutaweeen. That's the What you were saying over in Iran, you know, what group were you talking about there?
I wasn't talking about any group in Iran.
Oh, Jesus.
You're talking
about, anyway.
That was north of the Kurds.
Right.
Oh,
right,
the Yazidis. Yeah, the Yazidis.
This is Mutaween or Mutween, and they're the secret police, religious police, and behind the scenes government people that just grab people out of crowds and stone the shit out of them or beat them or whatever. That's their religious.
Oh, thing that's
that I was trying to. Right.
Yeah, definitely different groups.
I thought they, I don't know why the Yazidi was in my head thinking of that.
Well, and anyone, anyone who has a even a small interest in this podcast should recognize the name Yazidi from the Satanic Bible, because Anton LaVey talked about them quite a bit. They are believed to be devil worshippers by most Muslims because they have a totally different theological view on the world. And they worship peacock.
Not pecan?
All right. Well, I do want to get into Afghanistan, but we're going to take a quick break here and listen to some radio-free Satan commercials. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Afghanistan and why the president finds himself in the inevitable position of defending his pullout from Afghanistan. Stay tuned.
In 1966, Anton LaVey created the Church of Satan, marking the beginning of the Age of Fire and Year One Anno Satanas. In 1969, he published The Satanic Bible, codifying Satanism as a religion, the first time it's been done in human history.
In the name of Satan, ruler of the earth, king of hell, come forth from the pit, bestow the blessings of hell upon us. For we are your children, and we invoke thee this night.
In 2001, I was appointed High Priest of the Church of Satan. In 2007, I published the Satanic Scriptures, further defining and expanding on Satanic philosophy and greater magic ritual.
Hail Satan, full of might!
Hail Satan, full of might!
Our allegiance is with thee! Cursed are they!
Cursed
are the worshippers
of the Nazarene eunuch.
For the past 50 years, the Church of Satan has stood as the sole organization to define and defend Satanism as a religion. And though pretenders to the infernal throne have come and gone, we have stood the test of time and will into the future. Visit churchofsatan.com for more information and read the Satanic Bible and the Satanic Scriptures. Knowledge is the solution for ignorance. Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
This is Reverend Gene, the host of Vox Satane, exclusively on Radio Free Satan. Join me every week as we indulge in the classical side of music spanning the past 1,000 years. Vox Satane has already featured over 700 composers covering medieval, baroque, classical, romantic, and contemporary music, including chant, choral, opera, keyboard, and orchestral music, with composers ranging from Gluck to Gilmore, Bach to Bellavance, Talis to Taverner, and Paganini to Pärt. Get your weekly recommended dose of classical music right here on Vox Satane, only on Radio Free Satan, with me, Reverend Gene. Hail Satan!
I used to flip through one television station after another, disgusted by what was supposed to pass for comedy. Seeing all of those terrible, predictable comedians made me sad, and it made me shake in my seat. I thought it was the early signs of restless leg syndrome combined with clinical depression. So I went to see my doctor. It turned out that I just needed to listen to better comedy. That's when my doctor recommended The Devil's Mischief on Radio Free Satan.
The Devil's Mischief is a one-hour dosage of comedy and novelty that's made for you, not for the masses. After a decade of biased research, The Devil's Mischief has been clinically proven to be effective at inducing laughter and whimsical feelings in many listeners.
I can finally laugh again.
You don't need a prescription to listen to The Devil's Mischief. You don't even need to visit a pharmacy. That's because The Devil's Mischief is not a pill. It's not a syrup. It's not a spray, a cream, or even a suppository. It's a podcast.
All I need is a connection to the internet.
To learn all you need to know to listen to The Devil's Mischief, visit the official website, devilsmischief.com.
Whether you like to listen to podcasts in your web browser, download an episode directly, or subscribe to podcasts with iTunes, The Devil's Mischief can help.
Side effects may include side-splitting, gut-busting, knee slaps, and slapstick. Some listeners have reported being in stitches, with gags, or finding it to be a riot. Do not listen to The Devil's Mischief while drinking a beverage. Ask your doctor if The Devil's Mischief is right for you.
Or don't. Why should you have to pay that stupid copay for a doctor's visit?
Listen to The Devil's Mischief on RadioFreeSatan.com.
Come with me, Warlock Jeff Ivins, for a time trip back to the 1980s on the Metro. I play synth pop and other hits from the decades of indulgence, only on RadioFreeSatan.com.
Attention iTunes users, if you like this show and other programs from Radio Free Satan, then please take a moment to look us up on iTunes to rate and comment on the program. You can also do the same on Stitcher.com. Look up this program on Stitcher.com, rate it, and give us a review. And that's if you like the show, of course, you know, that you want to give it 5 stars and a good review, not, you know, give it 1 star and say a bunch of mean things. But hey, if you want to do that, then I'm sure there are a bunch of Christian podcasts on iTunes that you could do that on. Anyway, thank you for your support of RadioFreeSatan.com. And now back to the program.
So,
welcome back to the official Infernal Legion podcast, Sinister Scuttlebutt episode. Before the break, we were just talking about the drawdown in Iraq and the end of combat operations happening over there. And I want to slightly shift gears now because these two issues are connected and jump into Afghanistan. As we've announced on the show, and people I'm sure have heard in the news, we are expected to be out of Afghanistan by September 11th of this year, which will make it an even 20 years, basically, that this has been going on. And recently, and this is an article from CNN, President Joe Biden was put in the position of defending his drawdown in Afghanistan. I have a lot of thoughts about that. I'm going to get into those after we talk about the facts. Let's find out what the president had to say. So, again, from CNN, President Joe Biden delivered a vehement defense Thursday of his decision to end the war in Afghanistan, insisting no amount of sustained American presence there could resolve the country's own intractable problems. Instead, Biden argued American resources, lives, money, and attention were better focused elsewhere. Pressed on the likelihood of a total Taliban takeover, Biden grew defensive and said nothing in Afghanistan's history suggested there was anything the U.S. could do about it, which is absolutely fucking true. Quote, "I will not send another generation of Americans to war in Afghanistan with no reasonable expectation of achieving a different outcome." All right, so I'm trying to balance my thoughts here so I don't sound completely crazy.
But you are.
First and foremost, the Afghanistan drawdown has been inevitable since George W. Bush left office. President Obama has drawn down troops and added troops as necessary, but largely focused on drawing down our forces there. President Trump had peace talks with the Taliban and initially settled on a date for withdrawal. And now President Biden is seeing that through and making sure that it comes to an end. And yet, after 20 years of this, there are certain, let's just say, vested interests that don't want to see this end anytime soon. And that is why, my opinion, I'll put on my little tinfoil hat for this one, that is why, since it was announced and actually started happening, where troops were starting to draw down, we've seen so much media coverage, left, right, and center, of the Taliban taking back territory, enforcing their rules in certain areas, Afghan troops withdrawing into the major cities and defending those. And it's just been constant over and over again. And I think it's to garner our sympathy so we won't end this stupid, useless fucking war. And now President Biden is put in this position where he has to say the most common sense thing fucking imaginable, that he won't send another generation of Americans to die in a war that has no outcome. It's been 20 years. The Taliban isn't going away, and it's been 20 years, and the Afghan army isn't going to get any better. So if they're not capable of defending themselves against the Taliban, unfortunately, and I hate to say this because I was over there and I spent time there and I met wonderful people there, but that's a them problem. It's not an us problem anymore. One of his quotes from his remarks here I thought was very apropos, and that is, "The current security situation only confirms that just one more year fighting in Afghanistan is not a solution, but a recipe for being there indefinitely."
You there, Jeff?
And I think that quote sums up the position that President Biden is in, because that's what we're really looking at here. I mean, there are people currently at this very moment in Afghanistan fighting for the United States of America who weren't even alive when 9/11 happened. Not many of them, but enough, you know, that it makes a significant impact. And he goes on to say that we didn't invade Afghanistan to build a new Afghanistan, that we went over there to defeat Al-Qaeda and to get Osama bin Laden, and that we've accomplished those goals. And we have. Al-Qaeda is pretty badly beaten at this point. Osama bin Laden is dead, or, you know, depending on how big your tinfoil hat is, he's at least no longer a threat. And the Taliban is there. They've been there for generations in their own right, and they've never gone away, but they were at least beaten back enough that there was the beginning of a new Afghanistan forming. And a lot of amazing things have happened in that country in the meantime. But at this point, after 20 fucking years, if you can't defend your own country, I don't know what to tell you. Like, we've got bigger fish to fry over here in the States. And I point to, and we've talked about this numerous times, this whole idea of the sentiment that we can't let Afghanistan fall to the Taliban again, that we owe some kind of responsibility to that after 20 years of waging a war over there, that is all, in my opinion, on the shoulders of the military-industrial complex and the vested interests that don't want to lose their lucrative government contracts.
Okay. That's it, the vested interests. That, and you've got people that are going to feel butthurt because the people that were there before us were Russia, and the Afghans said, "We beat Russia." Now they're going to say, "We beat the U.S."
Well, I don't believe for a second that any billionaire actually, you know, has that stupid level of counterproductive pride. their notion is not there. They don't care if America gets beat by the Taliban. They just don't want to lose their $600 million aircraft contract.
right. or their dining facility contract, Halliburton.
Right. Yeah, the KBRs, the Halliburtons. And, you know, I was a security contractor. I get it. But all the security contracts, you know, the Blackwater or whatever they're called these days, and companies like that, I just think it's absolutely ridiculous, and I think it's such a see-through ploy on the behalf of – because a lot of these people – and the reason I say this, I'm not just going off on a weird conspiracy fucking jive. The very people who control these companies, or at least the ones who have interests in these companies, own the media outlets that are reporting on this stuff and the sentimentality drive. So it's not – I mean, it's not a leap to say that they're responsible for this, and that when the president, who is sticking, and good on him, by the way, sticking to a withdrawal date, which he's actually expecting to be largely completed weeks before 9/11. And he shouldn't have to defend his actions of pulling soldiers out of a 20-year war, bringing them back home, and focusing on American issues. I just don't think he should. So what do you guys have to say?
I say it's going to be a giant it's going to put more money back into our pockets, because we ain't going to have to pay for that shit anymore, which is good. We need that money.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. I mean, I'm sure that there'll still be some type of aid that we're giving, but the amount of money it takes to keep a war going is significantly higher, into the trillions. So, yeah, well, we're going to save a bunch of money in that regard.
They say a little over 50% of our federal income tax we send in, a little over 50% of that goes to defense.
Oh, certainly. And that's not going to change, not with threats like China looming. No.
See, my whole...
Yeah, but we need to put the money into that, though, instead of, you know...
Oh, I agree, yeah. And the Marine Corps is starting to do that, so good on them. And I would definitely like to see the rest of the military start focusing on active threats instead of a bunch of guys hiding in caves in Afghanistan.
Yeah. Right.
Well, my whole thing is basically, when we pull out of Afghanistan, pull out of Iraq, keep our guard up so we don't have another 9/11 happen. So we need
but stay the fuck out of there.
Yeah, stay out of there and just build our intelligence community up, back up to where it used to be prior to Gulf War, Persian Gulf War, not the not Enduring Freedom, but before that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't go for all the genocide and stuff that does happen with some of these Islamic groups. You know, putting people in cages and lighting them on fire and shit like that. I don't go for that shit. But, you know, these people have lived for thousands of years. And as I said earlier, they're resilient people. How are we to say that our way of government is the way they've got to do it? As long as they're not, you know, committing mass genocide or whatever, if they've got their own laws, let them do their fucking shit. You know, if they ain't bothering me, I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we talked when we were talking about Iraq earlier before the break, we mentioned the tribal structure of Iraq. It's
right.
So much worse in Afghanistan. There are so many more little tribes, and that's the way they've always lived. Even with a unified national government when the Taliban was initially in control, most tribes kept to themselves and did it their own way with their own interior laws and whatnot. And that was respected as long as they paid the tolls right. on the highway.
Right.
Things like that. I mean, there are I forget the exact number, but there's something like there's over 15 different dialects of language used just within the Afghanistan, which is only the size of Texas. So they weren't unified to begin with, much less are they going to have some national sense of pride and say, oh, we have to fight for a free Afghanistan now. It's just not going to happen. The one thing that I will criticize the boots on the ground commanders for is that they're not giving a lot of heads up to the Afghan military. Now, I understand, like, everything that we just said, you know, it's out there and I stand by it. But if you're going to pull out, at least don't set these guys up for failure. So on your way of pulling out, maybe give them more than 24 hours notice that the base is now theirs. Because they have to beat the Taliban in there to find out what they can use in the base. And that's been happening a lot. That's what happened at Bagram Air Base, which is, you know, one of the biggest military air bases in Afghanistan, if not the biggest. I think it's the biggest in Afghanistan. The Afghan military was told basically as we were walking through the gate, like, oh, yeah, this is yours now, by the way.
Defend it.
Right. And that's totally setting them up for failure. So there's some logistical stuff that I think the commanders on the ground are failing at. And one thing I was happy to see the president mention directly was the people who have assisted the U.S. government in Afghanistan over this 20-year war, people like interpreters and human intel contacts and things like that. And according to the president, within 2 weeks, those flights are supposed to start happening where those people who are awaiting visas into the United States are going to be transported to a third country where they'll be safe, while
until
they
wait, we can process that. Yeah, until we can process those applications.
I think they're putting their lives on the line just to help us. Not just their lives; their whole family's lives are on the line when they. So I think that's a good step. Go ahead, Dwayne. You're saying something.
No, you're fine. I think they asked for, I don't know how many billions of dollars it was, but they asked for, let's see. I thought I had this already. That son of a bitch. They asked for, I don't know, $100 billion or something to get that done. So at least they are taking care of those people.
Right.
I don't know if they need $100 billion, but...
Yeah, and I don't know the specifics of it, nor should they tell anyone the specifics of it, because then it would just put them in danger. You know,
right.
But I definitely think it's important if someone put their life and their whole family's life on the line to help us in our situation, that we do owe them something.
Well, we did the
same thing
in Vietnam.
Right. And in Iraq. Now, a lot of the interpreters I worked with in Iraq are now U.S. citizens living here in the U.S., and they're great guys, and I still stay in touch with them.
Yep. Love
them to death.
Yep.
And a lot of, you know, not to throw shade on my fellow soldiers, but a lot of them are a little bit braver and more put together than some of the guys I served with. So. But yeah, I think it's ridiculous that the president is in this position of defending a pullout from a 20-year war that we don't have, or we shouldn't have any interest in anymore. I think it's that should always be the go-to stance in any type of warfare situation. The initial thought should be, how do we not kill our own people? You know, and in this case, a drawdown is the way to go. And to be quite honest, I could give a fuck if the Taliban is claiming victory over Afghanistan or whatever. For 20 years, we kicked their asses constantly, left, right, and center, all over the place, up and down the mountains of Afghanistan. We took out their leaders. We took out their weapons caches. We crippled the Taliban.
Whenever we had a target, we took care of it.
Right.
A major target.
And now it's over. So now they can come back out, you know, the second generation of the Taliban and say, oh, yeah, we beat the United States. Yeah, well, good luck with that. You know, I don't care. Oh, Jeff, any thoughts on Afghanistan?
Nope, never been there.
Yeah, Afghanistan wasn't my war either. I did Iraq quite a few times and did Saudi Arabia. But...
Well, I hear Afghanistan's nice this time of year if you want to head over there.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
And get
you... I bet those burqas are very lightening up a little bit.
Right.
Well, they don't have to wear masks for COVID.
No, they don't.
Now, fortunately, I shouldn't say fortunately, you just had some knock on wood there, but hopefully next month we'll do another Afghanistan update, and it'll be the last one that we ever have to do.
Sure, he's been saying that for the last three updates.
Well, yeah, because we were supposed to pull out in May.
Well, no, wait a minute. Pulling out.
You know what happens when you don't
do?
I was going to say, you know what happens when you don't pull out when you're supposed to?
Yeah, 18 years of misery.
Right, and five more episodes.
Yeah.
Wow. So let's move on to some happy news. The shit show that is the Olympics in Tokyo this year. And I say that for many reasons. At the Olympics, obviously, everyone knows that it's been hammered from all sides. People are mad at it for not following proper COVID restrictions. People are mad at it for their treatment of Russia. People are mad because transgender athletes are competing. And people are mad because American athletes are smoking weed or whatever. There's all kinds of crap going on.
People are mad that it's fucking going on at all.
Right? You're mad about cardboard beds and soccer players with pink hair. I don't know what the hell they're mad about. But there is some great news to come out of that clusterfuck, and that is that we have our first soldier athlete who has won a gold medal in the Olympics. First Lieutenant Amber English won the gold medal in the women's skeet shooting event, and she set an Olympic record in the process. That's fucking great. And the reason I say this is, as I've told you guys and as people who follow me like on my social media and stuff know, I don't really watch the Olympics, and when I do, I only really watch wrestling and karate events. But I love to see that an active duty soldier here is setting records and winning gold medals in Tokyo. That's pretty fucking awesome. There are, of course, several soldier athletes competing in the Olympics, and I don't honestly know. Jeff, do you know if there's any sailor athletes competing?
None that I know of.
Okay. Usually the Army is the one that does these things. Yeah. So,
yeah, the sailors got real jobs.
Yeah, getting scurvy.
A little correction there, Lou, and I know you hate when I correct you, but actually she was Army Reserve.
Oh, boy.
Is she?
Yeah.
She is Army Reserve, well, not active bad. Duty. Which is even better in a way because, you know, she isn't doing it every day, you know, being an active duty soldier.
Well, I'm not sure being an active duty soldier would really help her in a skeet shooting event anyway.
If she, being an officer, if she wanted to go out with a shotgun and practice, I'm sure she could manage it.
Being a lieutenant, she has less rights and privileges than a private, and you know that.
Hey, watch it. She's a logistics officer.
Right.
But she is stationed at Fort Benning. Or she attended to OCS Officer Fort Benning.
She attended her OCS there, yes.
Yeah.
Which is basically her officer basic training.
Yeah.
Now, usually, and this is something I don't have, I'm looking at the Army Times article. I don't have this this information in front of me. I know that she is a quartermaster officer, a logistics officer, and that she completed her OCS in Fort Benning. But usually, soldiers who go through OCS to become officers are prior enlisted. So, and it doesn't say anything about her real background there on that. So I don't know if that's the case or not. But in any case, the point is, fucking cool. We have a soldier who went out there and set a record hitting 56 of 60 targets in the event and won a gold medal in the process. That is pretty badass. Props to Lieutenant English and the rest of the soldier athletes that are over there. Good luck to all of them. Oh, and apparently she won a bronze medal at the World Championships in 2018.
Before she joined the Army Reserves.
Yeah, before she joined. So that's that. Any thoughts on the Olympics or anything that's going on over there?
Well, let's see here. The women wearing bikini bottoms and the guys are not wearing bikini bottoms. Don't talk about screw job there. And Dwayne's like, what?
What I miss?
As two soldiers and a sailor, we would much prefer bikini bottoms.
Yeah, the women are wearing bikini bottoms, are required to wear bikini bottoms in the beach events, and the guys are wearing board shorts.
I guess that's another thing.
Well, in Japan, it's much easier to get in with the tentacles.
This is true. This is very true. We're the eels.
Eels.
So. Well, guys, I think that's going to do it. We're going to be back next month with a very interesting interview from our very first non-veteran interview, but we'll tell you guys why when that episode comes up. But in the meantime, Dwayne, Jeff, you guys have anything last minute to say?
Not too much.
He does his talk. He does all his talking. All
yeah, I do all my talking during the episode. And you guys tried to get me to shut up. You said it's the end. This is the end. I can hear Jim Morrison in the background in my My food's getting ready to come to me. I'm happy.
Well, until next time, folks, make sure you visit our website, www.infernallegion.org. And until the next episode, hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Veteran Suicide Hotline. Phone number is 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-TALK. And as soon as you dial that, you press number 1. Also, you can text to 838-255 for more information, but it is just as effective as chat. Support is free, confidential, and available 24/7. It is available to all servicemen and women, active and inactive, guard or reserve, and available to veterans, family members as well.